But we're just going to dive right into it. So obviously, we're at day 39 in the war. We are halfway through the sixth week of the conflict. And as we announced, it seems that the fighting, at least for now, is over. And where we were just 24 hours ago when we last spoke is that the deadline was coming down tonight. This deadline for which so much has been said, about which so much has been said. Initially, it was a 48-hour deadline, and then there were a few extensions. They extended it by 5 days, 10 days. It was supposed to be yesterday morning. And finally, on Sunday, Trump extended the deadline until tonight, until 8 o'clock tonight. And the threat was this. Trump said that if Iran did not open up the Strait of Hormuz, then Trump would escalate the fighting to engage all of Iran's civilian infrastructure. And not necessarily their oil and their energy sector, but their electrical infrastructure, their power grid, their power plants, their transportation infrastructure, their bridges, maybe civilian airports, things like that. Trump was threatening to annihilate Iran. And in no uncertain terms, he said on Easter Sunday, didn't say Happy Easter, by the way. No Happy Easter, no Christ is risen, not even a Happy Holidays. On Sunday, Trump said that if Iran does not capitulate, then we will kill their civilization. And there was a lot of blowback to that remark, including from myself. But it was clearly a serious threat, and Trump extended the deadline one more time. He pushed it back an additional 36 hours, and so that deadline was supposed to expire yesterday at 10 a.m. He pushed it back one final time to tonight at 8 o'clock Eastern time, and it looked like he was locked and loaded, ready to go. As of this morning and then this afternoon, the message came down from the White House that we were still on. So all the other deadlines got pushed back a couple of days before, you know, 48, 24 hours before, and it didn't seem that serious, and Trump was giving room for diplomacy to happen, for these intermediaries to maybe find a way to make it work with Iran. But as of this afternoon, it seemed like we were ready to go, and there were reports that B-52 bombers had flown past the United Kingdom on their way to the Middle East. And so it seemed like it was go time. It was serious. This is the real deadline. Trump was actually going to enforce it. And this was going to be the big one. I said it last night. I said it this morning. If Trump followed through, and it was looking like he would, then not only would Iran be leveled, because Iran has already been bombed 13,000 times, probably thousands more times at this point. That number's from last week. Iran has already been bombed over 10,000 times. We've hit everything. And so if Trump is serious about this civilization-killing strike, this was going to be catastrophic. And then that wouldn't be the end of it. Necessarily, Iran would then retaliate against all the countries in the Gulf, including and especially Saudi Arabia. So you would not only have this biblical attack on Iran, maybe up to and including their energy infrastructure, which would further constrain the supply of oil and totally inhibit the ability of any successor regime to stabilize the country, probably would send Iran down the path of failed state status with nearly 100 million people. But then on top of that, Iran would deliver a crushing blow then against all of the Persian Gulf countries, like Saudi Arabia, the Emirates, Qatar, Bahrain, usual suspects. And so the effect would only be compounded. So we were staring down the barrel of a very serious situation here. And it was only at the last minute, like I said, at about around 5:30 p.m. Central Time, it was announced that there was a ceasefire effective immediately. And so this came out on Truth Social. It was first announced by the president. He said that after discussions with the Pakistani prime minister and some of their other government officials, that Iran and the United States had come to an agreement for a 2-week ceasefire. Now, here are the terms. They're saying that once again, in reality, this is actually another deadline extension. Trump is saying that we're going to pick up the fighting in 2 weeks. We're delaying the biblical strike another 2 weeks. Properly understood, this is another extension. What makes it different is that there is the truce. There is a ceasefire. We will not bomb Iran, and Iran has pledged not to bomb shipping in the Strait, the Gulf countries, Israel, U.S. bases. But Trump is saying, you got 2 weeks, and after that 2 weeks, we expect that there will be a deal. And if there isn't a deal, then we're going to pick up where we left off and resume hostilities. And this was the deal that was announced at about 5:30. And so the civilization killing strike was averted at basically the last minute. It seems that we were on the move and we simply called back the bombers because this agreement happened. But as far as the details are concerned, we're not really sure exactly what they are. What Trump announced is that for 2 weeks, we are not attacking Iran as long as they open up the strait. Now, he has said since on True Social that we are effectively ceding control over the strait to Iran. So don't make a mistake here. They are opening up the strait. They are retaining control over the strait. So we are not going back to the status quo from before the war. What Trump and Iran are saying is that as long as the United States does not bomb Iran, Iran will not bomb shipping in the Strait, and they will facilitate the safe transit of tankers and cargo ships through the Strait without being attacked. However, this is being done under the jurisdiction and supervision of the IRGC and its Navy, and they are charging a toll. So they are opening up the strait, but they still control the shipping. And to that end, they're charging money. They are determining how many ships will flow through the strait on a given day. And what it looks like right now is 10 to 20 tankers will go through the strait every day. And each of those tankers will now pay $2 million to Iran. And that money will be split between Iran and Oman, because the strait is situated between those two countries, and Iran will use that money to rebuild their country. And apparently, Trump is okay with this. So this is a two-week plan, deferring further military action to a later date so that we will apparently now meet with Iran in Pakistan to hammer out a better, more comprehensive, longer-term deal. In the meantime, we've given Iran control over the strait, so much so that they're going to make money off of it, and they're going to reinvest that money in the reconstruction and rebuilding of their country. Now, this is what was announced earlier tonight. And what's interesting about that is this is a complete and total U.S. defeat. This is an absolute, there is no ambiguity here. It's not debatable. It's not subject to interpretation. We lost decisively. It's like I said, when we got into this conflict, we had about five military objectives here, and these were the things we were demanding from Iran. We were seeking an end to their nuclear program, forfeiture of their highly enriched uranium stockpile, restrictions on their ballistic missiles, restrictions on their support for regional proxies, and regime change. Of course, once the war started, Iran seized control of the strait, and so the sixth objective became to wrest control over the strait, or at least open it for shipping. We did not achieve any of those things. Any of those things. There is no regime change. We did not suppress or destroy their capability to build and launch drones and missiles. So they maintain that conventional strategic capability. We did not seize or in any way restrict their ability to enrich uranium. We didn't take their stockpile of enriched uranium. We didn't restrict their ability to further enrich or make more enriched uranium. We did not meaningfully degrade or destroy the Iranian Revolutionary Guard, and the regime remains intact. The only thing that you can say that we achieved from the war is that we dealt a pretty significant blow to their Navy. Arguably, We damaged a significant percentage of their missile launch platforms, and probably their stockpile of missiles is less than 50% of what it was before the war. But it was not destroyed. It was not annihilated, and neither was their navy. They still maintain a pretty substantial navy, which consists in fast and maneuverable speedboats. They still maintain about 50 tiny submarines, which they use to close the Strait of Hormuz. They still maintain their mine-laying vessels. So the IRGC still has a very small and nimble and mobile navy, which, again, they use to close the strait. It's just those bigger ships which were destroyed. That's about all that you can say. So we did not achieve any of the objectives that we set out to accomplish. And not only did we not achieve a single objective, but we're actually worse off than we were before. Prior to the war, you had free navigation in the Strait of Hormuz. Now, this is Iranian territory. Iran has claimed this waterway. They have taken it. They have seized it. And now they're using it to enrich themselves. Now, this is Iranian territory, and they're charging a toll. So the status quo actually empowers Iran more. We set out to take things away, and after these 39 days of war, Iran has more than they had before in terms of capability. In terms of quantity, yes, they've lost some of their command, control, and communications. And yes, they've lost a lot of equipment, and we dealt a very significant blow to their military and conventional forces. In terms of quantity, their armed forces are degraded, but in terms of capability, nothing has fundamentally changed. They still have their drone and missile-producing cities buried underground, totally operational, and they will be making drones and missiles for the next 2 weeks. And they still have a stockpile of drones and missiles, and they still have launch platforms hidden and dispersed throughout the country, and they still have the IRGC in power with a decentralized chain of command. It's all still there. And now they have the strait. And it is formal, official, and conceded and recognized by the United States. So this is why, to me, it's sort of a strange agreement. Because I said last night on the show that a ground operation was likely at some point in time, only because I don't see an off-ramp which seems satisfying to the United States and the conditions it laid out. I don't see how there's an off-ramp, how there's an agreement that Iran will accept that will satisfy any of the conditions, victory conditions or otherwise, of Trump and the United States. It seems that the only off-ramp is a complete and total humiliation. And there's no face-saving, and there's no bluffing, there's no finessing. It's just a total defeat. And that's what this is. This is Trump waving the white flag. And it seems that we talked about this for the past couple of weeks. We said that the strategy was escalating to de-escalate. Trump is going to try a ground operation on the islands, on the mainland. He's going to try to notch a victory, boost morale, so he can credibly claim, or in reality in some way, that we ended the war on our terms. If we get a victory, we can say, hey, look, we won and now we're out. And maybe if we get some kind of significant victory, maybe we don't have to accept all of Iran's terms. We can get something to show for it so that there's some credibility when we say we ended it on our terms. I thought that was the off-ramp. But this off-ramp seems to be we are bluffing and saying that the escalating to de-escalate is that we're not going to nuke you. What's this victory that allows us a face-saving retreat, a surrender with dignity? It's that we are not going to nuke you. Instead of taking the islands, taking their energy hostage, instead of securing the highly enriched uranium with some ground operation, instead of actually getting any kind of real tactical victory, we're simply saying, well, we could have destroyed you, we're sparing you, and so that's how we're ending this on our terms. So we don't have to destroy your country. That's how we won. We accepted all your terms, we gave you the strait, and we didn't destroy you. We won. Which is a bit surprising. So this is the article about the actual deal. We'll work through this, and then we'll talk about some of the particulars here, some of the confusion. This is from the New York Times. It says, quote, "The United States and Iran reached an 11th-hour ceasefire deal on Tuesday evening, hours after President Trump threatened to start wiping out Iran's whole civilization if it did not allow commercial shipping to pass safely through the Strait of Hormuz. Mr. Trump announced the agreement in a post on social media hours after Pakistan, a mediator in the dispute, urged him to stand down from the 8 p.m. deadline that he had set for Iran to accede to his demands. Pakistan proposed that each side observe a two-week ceasefire and that during that time, Iran allow oil, gas, and other vessels to proceed unmolested through the economically vital waterway. Shortly after the ceasefire announcement, a U.S. official said military strikes against Iran had stopped, and Iran's foreign minister, Abbas Araghchi, said in a statement that the Iranians would cease their defensive operation and that for a period of 2 weeks, safe passage through the Strait of Hormuz will be possible if coordinated with Iran's military. Israel supports President Trump's decision to stop attacking Iran for 2 weeks, according to the office of the Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. However, the statement said the ceasefire did not include Lebanon, contradicting an earlier statement from Prime Minister Shahbaz Sharif of Pakistan. The ceasefire buys both sides time to try to reach a longer-term end to the war, which began at the end of February with the U.S. and Israel subjecting Iran to a withering military assault. Iran accepted Pakistan's ceasefire proposal after frantic diplomatic efforts by Pakistan and last-minute intervention by China, a key ally, according to three Iranian officials. Iran's National Security Council officially confirmed the agreement, casting it as a victory in which the U.S. accepted Iran's terms. So here's where it gets a little bit tricky. So a lot of people are saying, hip, hip, hooray, three cheers for Trump. The mad lad did it. It's actually a total American victory. And don't get me wrong. I think we're all breathing a sigh of relief that Trump did not kill Persia and genocide everybody and nuke Iran. I think we're all pleased with this. And the way that you can describe what has happened over the past 2 weeks is this is brinksmanship. Arguably, you could say this is the madman doctrine. This is Nixon's madman theory, which is that Trump is acting crazy, acting erratic. If you think that he's gone insane, well, maybe that's part of the science. Maybe that's actually part of the strategy. This is something that Kissinger and Nixon worked on in the 70s. If you can convince the adversary that you're really going to do it, if you can convince them that you are irrational, if you act erratic, then they might believe that you will accept an irrational exchange of fire. Because remember, the whole strategy about bluffing to destroy Iran is the idea that, you know, why can the United States not escalate against Iran? Well, because if we bomb their energy or their civilian infrastructure, they're going to do the same thing to the Gulf. And that is totally intolerable to the United States because it would have detrimental effects on the global economy. So the way that you could say that is it is not rational for Washington to escalate against Iran. There's no rational way for the United States to escalate against Iran. And if we cannot escalate, then that means that Iran has escalation dominance. We cannot gain leverage over them because we ultimately don't have the checkmate move. We can't escalate it any further, but they can. And so we were in a situation where Iran felt that they had all the leverage, they had the advantage, they were winning, and there was really nothing we could do about it. Because at the end of the day, we can't topple the regime, we can't stop them from shooting drones, missiles, or laying mines. And so we could do anything to Iran, and their regime will survive, and the strait will remain closed. And we need the strait open. So we could do a ground operation and we could keep killing their officials and we could do our worst. But when the dust clears, the strait will be closed. They will still be there. And we're going to have to sue for peace to get our precious oil and gas and all the other things that come from the Gulf. And so Iran knew that. And we knew that. And they knew that we knew that they knew that. And so we were in this trap where, again, we had no ability to escalate it, to gain any kind of leverage, or to convince Iran that we were willing to do what it takes to gain leverage over them. So you could say that there was no rational way for us to settle this on our terms. So what was the strategy? Well, Trump had to threaten to do something irrational. Trump said, well, I will bomb your oil and I will bomb your power grid and I will bomb your desalination plants and I will bomb your bridges. And any student of international relations, anybody that's watching this would say, that's a bluff. He's bluffing. He can't do that. If he bombs Iran's infrastructure, he knows, he has to know that Iran will retaliate and do the same thing to Saudi Arabia. And if Iran starts raining missiles on Saudi Aramco and Qatar's LNG, and if they bomb the desalination plant that supplies Dubai and Abu Dhabi, then literally the whole economy melts down. And they still aren't going to open up the strait. So any observer would say, he's bluffing. He's not really going to do it. Because if he did that, it would involve these unacceptable losses. That would not be rational. That's not something that Trump can rationally do. He can't nuke Iran. He can't invade Iran. He can't risk a ground operation in Iran. And he can't even bomb any economic targets because Iran has a check for that. Iran has a move. They can outmaneuver the United States and they can make it hurt much worse. So what did Trump have to do? Well, he had to make Iran think that he was willing to do something irrational. This is brinksmanship. This is madman theory. He had to threaten Iran. We're going to bomb all your infrastructure. And Iran is surely thinking what we were all thinking, which is he's not really going to do it. He's not seriously going to risk all that. But Trump had to convince them that he was crazy enough to do it. At the minimum, he had to instill in them doubt. He had to sow the seeds of doubt so that somebody in the room would say, I'm not so sure. He seems like he's lost it. He's not even celebrating Easter. He seems homicidal, genocidal. He's got these religious zealots around him. Maybe he really thinks he's the Antichrist. He thinks he's the Messiah, and he's really going to wipe out Iran, and he doesn't care if the whole world comes down with it. You just needed to plant the seed of doubt, and then Iran would say, all right, we don't want to lose this economic infrastructure, because it would have been a mutually assured destruction. The United States could have absolutely bombed Iran to the Stone Age. And if we targeted their economic infrastructure, even if the IRGC held on, there would be no country for much longer. You destroyed the transportation, energy infrastructure, 50% of their revenue, which is their oil. There's no society anymore. So maybe they'll hang on, but not for long. And they know that. Maybe they know they can inflict damage on Saudi Arabia and hurt our economy, but they also know that it wouldn't be a walk in the park for them either. It would probably be the end on a long enough timeline for them as well. And so that's all Trump really had to do. And clearly that was, in retrospect, we can safely say that was probably the strategy, was going to the brink, acting erratically, and convincing them that Trump would really cross the line, do the unthinkable, kept them guessing so that they would accept a ceasefire. And that was clearly the MO. Now, where does that leave us right now? Well, like I said, the terms are these. It's a 2-week ceasefire. Trump says we're deferring the enforcement of this ultimatum as long as Iran is going to open up the strait and allow the free passage of ships, free navigation of commercial shipping. But also, it's contingent on another deal that Iran actually has to negotiate an end to the war. And this is where it gets tricky. So the U.S. claims that they agreed and Iran says they agreed. But Iran is also now saying that the United States has agreed to their 10-point plan. You might remember that as the United States was talking up the peace process, we submitted to them a 15-point plan, which demanded their unconditional surrender, basically. And it demanded that they give up everything, missiles, centrifuges, enriched uranium, support for the proxies, the Strait of Hormuz. And Iran was never going to consider that, much less accept it. Iran countered with a 10-point plan of their own, which was just as maximalist. Iran wanted the United States to close all our military bases and give them reparations and promise to never attack them again and give them the Strait of Hormuz and allow them to charge money for all the shipping that goes through the strait. And this deal, although it was sort of shocking, Trump said it was a step in the right direction, even though, again, Iran is making these huge demands. Well, now that the ceasefire is in place, the Iranians are claiming that the U.S. has agreed to this 10-point plan. And this 10-point plan, which appears to be somewhat modified, says a lot of the same things. This new 10-point plan says the United States doesn't have to pay reparations to Iran, but Iran is going to control the strait. And Iran is going to enforce rules of engagement in the strait. And Iran is going to charge a toll. And they're going to share the revenue from the strait with Oman. And they're going to use the revenue from the strait to rebuild their country in lieu of reparations. And it sounds like Trump has agreed to this aspect of it. But Iran also says that the United States has agreed that they can enrich uranium. Now, the U.S. denies that that's true. But this is also part of this 10-point plan that Iran claims we accepted. So there's some things that Trump has agreed to in this plan. There's other things that we don't. Iran says we accepted the whole thing. It's an unconditional surrender. We gave them everything they wanted. The United States does acknowledge we are giving them the strait for now. We are going to let them charge the toll, and they are going to use that to rebuild their country as a form of reparations. Iran says we have a right to enrich uranium. The United States doesn't agree to that. And this is the other big one. In this 10-point agreement, it says that Israel will stop bombing Lebanon. Well, we haven't talked too much about this, but this is another major theater in the conflict. There's about 1 million people that have been displaced because Israel has been striking Lebanon hundreds, thousands of times in southern Lebanon, but also in the capital in Beirut. And so this has displaced a significant percentage of Lebanon's population. Israel's launched extensive ground operations inside the country, and they're pushing in with columns of tanks and lots of ground troops. And so this 10-point plan says that Israel is now done fighting Hezbollah in Lebanon. And just like some of these other points of the deal, Israel says, we don't agree to that. We never agreed to a ceasefire with Lebanon. And so now you wonder, what exactly was agreed to here? Is it just the 2-week ceasefire? Because the 2-week ceasefire seems to include that Iran controls the strait and charges money. But Iran says, no, no, it's not just the 2 weeks in the strait. We also have this 10-point program that the U.S. and Israel agreed to, and it includes we get to enrich uranium, and they're not going to fight Hezbollah anymore. But the U.S. and Israel say we didn't agree to either of those things or some of the other points in the program. Well, if they don't agree to that, do we have a deal? If Israel carries on their war with Lebanon, will Iran keep their end of the bargain and not close shipping in the strait? Nobody knows. We don't know. We don't know the terms of the deal. And already that seems to be being tested because as we speak, Iran is still launching missiles at the Gulf countries. And they're saying that, well, maybe these commanders or decentralized nodes in the IRGC, maybe they have their orders to hit the Gulf and they didn't hear about the ceasefire before they launched the strike. And so it's going to take some hours for this ceasefire to settle, so to speak. But Israel is currently bombing Iran right now. The U.S. and Israel were bombing Iran heavily right up until the ceasefire was declared. And now Israel continues to bomb Iran. So did Israel agree to a ceasefire? Because this is not just a U.S. war. This is a U.S.-Israel war. They've been responsible for a significant amount of the strikes, too. And in particular, the strikes on energy and on command and control. So, question, is Israel part of the deal? Another question, if the U.S. and Israel did not agree to let Iran enrich, if we did not agree to a ceasefire in Lebanon, then will Iran hold up their end of the bargain with the strait? These are some questions that need to be answered, I would think, in the next 12 to 24 hours, if we even really have a deal. Now, let's say that all of those things outstanding, all those things, I should say, notwithstanding, let's just talk about this two-week ceasefire. Let's talk about this idea that Iran will open up the strait and they'll charge money and the U.S. is okay with this. And in the meantime, the U.S. will not hit Iran. And in the meantime, there's going to be negotiations. Allegedly, there's going to be a summit in Pakistan led by J.D. Vance. So what's really going on here with this two-week truce? Well, here's the thing about this. Like we talked about before, the U.S. has not achieved any of its objectives. Why did we even get here? Well, if you'll recall, we got here. We could go way, way back, but let's just go back a year. We got to this point because Israel attacked Iran last year. Iran, because of the fallout of the withdrawal of the United States from the Iranian nuclear deal, Iran is enriching uranium very close to weapons-grade uranium levels. And they have a lot of highly enriched uranium. The Israelis claim almost 1,000 pounds or 1,000 tons. I don't know how you measure that, actually. But they have, I think it's 1,000 pounds of highly enriched uranium, enough for 9 or 10 nuclear bombs. And as long as Iran is not a part of the JCPOA, as long as they are not under IAEA inspections, and as long as they have this breakneck pace of nuclear enrichment, then we have to assume on some level that they are either creating the material for a nuclear bomb or they're making a nuclear bomb. This is a logic. I'm just telling you, I'm not saying they are, but I'm saying that if they have a stockpile of 1,000 pounds of 80% enriched uranium, and they have six-generation centrifuges in Fordow that are running day and night, and they're producing enough material for a bomb every single month, then the U.S. and Israel have to assume, again, they're either making the material, the fuel for a nuclear device, or they're racing towards a bomb. And so last year, Israel intervenes to destroy their nuclear program, and they need our help to bomb those facilities in Fordow, Natanz, and Isfahan, which are fortified underground. Well, the second that we and Israel intervened and did this, what we actually did was we accelerated the process. By attacking Iran, they probably resolved and said, negotiations with the U.S. are futile. We can never have peace with the West. Inevitably and invariably, they seek our destruction. The only way to protect ourselves is to develop a nuclear hedge, is to develop a nuclear deterrent so that they will never try to destroy us. After that attack, Iran sent out all the inspectors, refused to negotiate with the United States, would hardly even talk to the Europeans. It was then that Netanyahu came to the United States and said, we got another problem. Not only is that highly enriched uranium still in Iran, and probably they have other centrifuges, but Iran says, or rather, Israel says, Iran is also making 300 ballistic missiles every month as well. And they are rebuilding their missile stockpile. They've almost replenished it to the levels before the war that happened last June, the 12-day war. And soon they're going to have so many missiles, they're going to preemptively attack us. And they also pose a threat to your bases and to the Gulf countries. So we need to go in and destroy that capability too. And so this was really the pretext. And Israel got the United States into the conflict so that, one, we could make sure Iran never accesses the highly enriched uranium. We could finish the job on their nuclear program. But maybe more importantly, so we could destroy all their drones and missiles. And then maybe the dream scenario is that we topple the government so that we don't have to worry about any of that. If we get a different regime that will acquiesce to Israel and the United States, then they'll just give up their nukes and missiles. They won't need them because they no longer have sovereignty. They're now a suzerain of Israel like every other country in the entire world. And so that was the logic of the war. So then we went in heavy in February. And we tried to topple the government, and we tried to destroy their missiles, and maybe, possibly, we even tried to secure the highly enriched uranium this weekend, and it failed, so we said we were rescuing some pilot. Okay. Well, now that the war is over, we have achieved nothing. What is the current state of Iran? Well, if they didn't trust us before, they trust us less now. If they didn't believe in diplomacy before, they certainly believe in diplomacy less now. If they thought they needed a nuclear and missile deterrent before the war, now they absolutely know, and they think this even more so, that they need a nuclear and missile deterrent. The U.S. is threatening to kill their country, kill their leaders, destroy their infrastructure. So what do you think Iran is going to look like after we dropped 15,000 bombs on them, or after we bombed them 15,000 times? What does Iran look like after we murdered their supreme leader, after we killed 160 school children, after we threatened to annihilate their civilization and send them to the Stone Age? What does that look like now? Well, like I said, less willing to negotiate, less willing to make a deal, less trusting than ever, and probably recognizing more than ever that they need deterrence. And deterrence only comes from a huge stockpile of drones and missiles and probably a nuclear bomb. What does the leadership think? Is the leadership more or less defiant, more or less hardline? The remaining leadership in Iran watched all of their colleagues get murdered. Their families, their colleagues, their superiors and bosses, they watch them all get murdered in cold blood. And they watch Trump joke about it and be sarcastic about it on the internet. And you think now Iran is going to, they're going to make a deal? They're going to stop building missiles? They're going to stop enriching uranium? They're going to give, what does the United States want? They're going to give the United States all their uranium? They're going to let the United States oversee the destruction and decommissioning of the centrifuges. They're going to give up the strait. Not going to happen. So Iran is actually, from our point of view, or the point of view of our military planners, it's actually worse than ever. Because now Iran is like a perma enemy. Now they are absolutely uncooperative. And now they're almost certainly going to do all the things that we went to war to stop them from doing. You can bet that what they're going to do immediately is start building more drones and missiles. And they're going to try to replenish their reserves. And they're going to try to recruit more soldiers and more officers. And yeah, maybe they're going to start enriching more uranium. And you think that in the next 2 weeks, they're going to sit down with the United States and agree to give all that up? And why would they? We just surrendered. What was the experience of the past 39 days? We lost. We hit them with everything we had, and we couldn't compel them to do what we wanted them to do. We could neither defeat them, we could neither defeat their military or displace their regime, nor could we open up the strait and rescue our economy. So we had to sue for peace. We had to bluff our way to an uneasy truce where we did not get to impose any conditions. As a matter of fact, conditions were imposed on us. And now Iran is going to sit across the table from us, and they're going to give us everything that we want. They're going to give us something. They're going to give us anything at all, anything that we want. It doesn't even make any sense. So what is going to happen in the next 2 weeks is that, like I said, Iran is going to take a deep breath. They're going to try to get more drones. They're going to try to get more missiles. They're going to think, what can enhance our ability to close the strait forever in the next 2 weeks? What is the cheapest, most mobile? What is the most U.S.-Israel resistant weapon system or tactic that we can use to close the strait, kill Americans, blow up American bases? And then they're just going to order as much of that as they can from China or Russia or wherever. They're going to get to work on it in their own drone and missile cities underground. And they're not going to sit across the table from a U.S. representative and give up enrichment and give up the highly enriched uranium and give up the missiles and give up the proxies. It's not going to happen. I don't see how it would. And then you think about it from the U.S. perspective. Are we going to let the 2 weeks expire and then let them off the hook? And we have to presume that if we give them more than 2 weeks, surely they're going to build all those missiles again. Surely they're going to build all those drones again. And yeah, maybe one day they're going to try to get their highly enriched uranium out from underneath the rubble. And do you think any of those conditions from before the war have changed? Israel is no longer going to be concerned about this. The Gulf countries will no longer be concerned with this. They're more concerned about it now than they were before because now they've lived it. Iran has destroyed the image and perception of all those rich Gulf cities. Their tourism, their real estate, their banking industry is all shattered. Because once the public sees drones and missiles landing at your international airport, yeah, ultra high net worth individuals don't want to go and live there. The first job of any multi-billionaire, any ultra-high net worth individual is I don't want to die in a drone attack in a hotel or an airport. So all these mega rich people, they're all thinking twice about whether they want to live in Dubai. And all these other elite human capital, they're thinking twice about whether they want to put their data centers or have their specialty banking services in Abu Dhabi. Because, you know, they don't want to get hit by a drone when they're flying in. They don't want to get hit by a drone when they wake up in the morning. They're looking at Singapore. They're looking at, I don't know, any other city. Maybe they're looking at Egypt's new capital or something else. So the Gulf, they more than ever see Iran, and in particular its missiles, as an unacceptable threat to their stability. And so does the public. And so does Israel. And so does the United States. So we're going to give them 2 weeks. Do you think that after that 2 weeks, if Iran hasn't given up their missiles and nukes, do you think we're going to let them off the hook? And we're going to say, all right, keep building drones and missiles and nukes. It's okay. And keep charging $2 million a pop to buy drones and missiles and nukes. And we're going to wait another 6 months until Iran has 5,000 missiles and 100,000 drones and whatever. Then we're in the same position we were 3 months ago. And that means that Israel's going to be begging us to annihilate Iran. And this time, so will Saudi Arabia, the UAE, Bahrain, Kuwait, Qatar, and the rest of them. So I don't see how the truce is going to hold. I don't see how the United States is even capable of letting Iran off the hook. It's like, look, Iran is never going to agree to our demands. They're not going to agree because those are the things that keep Iran safe, and we just proved that because we tried to annihilate them. That's one. Two, we just surrendered, so not really in a position to make a lot of demands. And if we can't impose conditions on Iran, again, we have to assume that they see themselves as untouchable. They have reestablished deterrence. They've taken control of the strait. They know that for us to go back to war is going to be a big to-do. It's going to be very costly. What happens if the U.S. attacks Iran again? The oil markets are going to plummet more than before. Why? Why is the price of oil going to explode even more than before? Because investors are going to say, here we go again. So this is just our lives now. Every 2 weeks, every 4 weeks, the Strait of Hormuz will close. They're going to say we need to price in some long-term constraint on supply. So Iran knows and we know we can't just keep coming back and coming back. We got to strike while the iron is hot. And the same is true of all of the money in the Gulf. You think all these ultra-high net worth individuals, what do you think they're going to say when we go to war with Iran again? And here we go again, drones and missiles raining on Abu Dhabi and Doha and Dubai and Manama. And Riyadh, no, they're going to look at that and say, that's it, honey, we're leaving. They're going to say, damn it, I told you this was going to happen. Here we go again, more drones and missiles. You should have listened to me. We're moving to Singapore. I told you we should have moved to Nevis. There's no missiles flying at Nevis. There's no missiles flying at Mauritius and Seychelles. So we can't go back. Iran knows that, and we know that. So are we going to let them go? They're not going to agree. And if they don't agree, then they're going to make more nukes and more missiles and drones. If they do that, then they're inherently going to threaten us because every deterrent defensive weapon is dual. It's also offensive, too. Are we going to allow Iran to be defiant, emboldened, enriched by the strait, rebuilt, building more missiles and drones than ever, completely hating the United States, turned against the entire region? No, I don't think we are. And I don't think we're going to sit around and wait for them to get much stronger before we recognize inevitably that we have to hit them again. And so I feel very strongly, right? And I know the ceasefire is young, so who knows? Who knows what will happen in the next couple of weeks? Maybe this was a bit of a surprise. Maybe there will be more surprises. But from where I'm sitting right now, it seems like this is a very irrational ceasefire. And I don't see how the U.S. and Israel are able to accept this state of affairs for very long. It's like I said at the end of last year's war. It's like I said during October 7th. When you look at the fundamentals, this is a situation that the U.S. just cannot accept from like a mathematical point of view. It's not a question of vibes or feelings or speculating about people's personalities and motivations or anything like that. Their religion, their idea of the end of the world. It's very simple. It is literally like a math equation. Iran knows that the U.S. and Israel are plotting to destroy and overthrow their government. The only thing they could do to prevent that is these deterrent weapons. What do they have? They can use drones and missiles to close a strait, and they can get a weapon of mass destruction. If the U.S. tried it before, they'll try it again. Iran knows that. They don't trust us. They're going to endeavor to build these capabilities back so that we don't try it ever again. And then they can negotiate from a position of strength. But as they build up these weapon systems, we're going to recognize that. We know that's happening. And we're going to be telling ourselves, the longer we wait, the stronger they get, the more leverage they have. Our window of opportunity is closing. And that window of opportunity is that Iran is historically weak. Historically weak because their proxies have been defeated. The Assad regime was defeated. The Revolutionary Guard was expelled from Syria. Israel has engaged the entire region in this rolling 2.5-year campaign. We just dropped all this ordnance on Iran. We crossed the line. We made the move. We sucked it up and embraced the suck and the pain. And that window is closing. If we let Iran go, we can't go right back in for the reasons I said. And if we can't go right back in and they're able to rebuild for a long period of time, Iran is going to get back on their feet. They're a powerful country. They just have a lot of those fundamentals. Big population, big territory. They have commodities. They're oil rich, big middle class, universities, experts. They have the blueprints for the nuclear weapons. They're going to rebuild their strength, and they're more defiant than ever. The question is, why would the U.S. allow that? Why would Israel, moreover, allow that? I don't think they will. So the window of opportunity for us is that the Trump administration will recognize that this was a total disaster. The only thing that we can count on is the Trump administration will recognize this was an abject mistake. It has almost ruined everything. It has almost ruined the entire world, if it hasn't already. It has almost ruined the MAGA movement. It is killing the Republicans' chances in the midterms. Our only chance is for Trump to recognize that and then go after the real culprit, which is Israel. The U.S. and Iran can make a deal. We can give them the straight. It's fine. And the reason is we can actually compel the Gulf countries to make a deal with Iran. The Gulf countries have things in common with Iran, and they were trending in that direction. In 2023, it was Beijing that brokered a rapprochement between Saudi Arabia and Iran. Those relations were being repaired. How did these discussions come about? Because Turkey, Pakistan, and Saudi Arabia brought Iran to the table. It is Turkey, Pakistan, and Saudi Arabia that are forming an alliance. Saudi Arabia and Pakistan formed a mutual security guarantee, a mutual defense treaty. And they're bringing Turkey into that as well. And they are forming up their own axis in the Middle East. You've got India versus Pakistan, Turkey versus Greece, Saudi versus the Emirates. And the way it's lining up is Greece, Emirates, and India versus Pakistan, Saudi, and Turkey. And Pakistan, Saudi Arabia, and Turkey, they don't like Israel. Israel's aligning with the rival faction. And you know who else hates Israel? Well, Iran. So there would be a natural way to integrate Iran into the region. There is a ready-made framework where Iran fits very easily into this equation with Pakistan, with Saudi Arabia, with Turkey, with Egypt. And they can form their own rival bloc, and maybe they can pressure Israel. That could happen. and Iran could get the strait and they can be enriched by it, and they could get a security guarantee if they normalize relations with our Gulf allies and they become economically and strategically interdependent, and we can compel the Gulf countries to do this, and Iran would have no reason to fear regime change, and then they wouldn't need nuclear weapons and missiles. Then they could be happy with a regular conventional military, and then they could prosper. The reason we cannot have this is because then Israel would not have all the cards. That's the only reason. Why can this not happen? Because then the entire Muslim world would be allied and arrayed against Israel. And Israel could not compel them to do anything. And realistically, neither could the United States. All those countries put together would be a counterweight to Israel and its allies. Israel's reliable allies are Greece, Azerbaijan, the UAE, Jordan. These are their allies, but the countries against them, it's all the big ones. The only real countries in the Middle East are Turkey, Iran, and Egypt. Those are civilizations. That's the Ottomans, the Egyptians, and the Persians. Those are real civilizations with huge populations and huge militaries. Turkey has a huge military and a huge population. Egypt has a huge military and a huge population. So does Iran. The rest of these countries don't mean as much. Abu Dhabi, the Emirates. What's an emirate? The Trucial States? I mean, they used to sell pearls. Now they sell oil. They're not real countries. They have foreign workers are most of their population. They don't have real industry. That's obviously a mirage, was exposed by the war. So the big players in the Middle East want to get together. If you had Pakistan, Iran, Egypt, and Turkey, that's a coalition. That's a bloc that Israel could not dominate, even with their capabilities. And that is exactly what they seek to undermine. That is why they want Iran to be destroyed, because they then want to leverage all these countries against all the other countries. And they want their influence to, they want to dominate the Persian Gulf. If they can dominate Iran, if they can dominate the Gulf countries, if they could dominate their immediate periphery, then they effectively control the Eastern Med, the Aegean, the Suez, the Strait of Hormuz, the Persian Gulf. They control that vital choke point, the Middle East, which is in the center of Asia, Europe, and Africa. It's the center of the world island. It's the key to everything. That's what they're playing for here. So again, if we really recognize the real opportunity, it is that we can look at the situation. This is something that has been detrimental to America and Trump and his movement and the GOP. Israel's the culprit. If we can restrain them by pursuing regime change in Israel, if we can get Israel to accept terms, who is Iran worried about? They're worried about Israel. If we can get Israel to agree not to destroy Iran, if we could get them not to invade Lebanon, we could get a long-term deal with Iran. We can build confidence with them. Israel is the problem here. And that's really, that is what it comes down to. Either we are going to war with Iran or we're going to war with Israel. Period. Bottom line. End of story. Because those are the only options. If Israel is never told no, if Israel continues to control this relationship, if we are not able to defy them, if we remain under their control, then we will go to war with Iran again. And we will keep going to war with Iran until there is regime change, because that is what Israel wants. And as it stands, what Israel wants, Israel gets. And no one can tell them no, because everybody's afraid of them. And so that's what they want. That's what we're going to get. And it's just a question of how and when. False flag. What will be the pretext to go back in? And how big? Nuclear? Ground forces? Will it be like Iraq? Will it be more? God only knows. That is a certainty. The only other option is if we take the fight to Israel. And finally, an American president says, you are not in control. We don't like Netanyahu. He's got to go. We want somebody else. And newsflash, you're not getting Lebanon and you're not getting Iran. You're going to have to learn to get along. And you're not nuking anybody. You can forget that. And you're not bombing Iran, because if you do, you're cut off. That is the only alternative. And think about how insane that is. Think about how behind door one is a nuclear war, potentially. If you really want to topple the government in Iran, you're talking about a ground invasion. You're talking about maybe nuclear weapons. You're talking about bankrupting America, the end of the American empire, engendering nothing but ill will towards the United States. It's unthinkable. What's the alternative? We have to tell Israel no. And you think about what's involved in that. That's what's terrifying. Can an American president tell Israel no? Will we have to go to war with our own country to do this? What is Joe Lonsdale going to think? If or when Trump tells Netanyahu no, what is Mark Levin, Ben Shapiro, Joe Lonsdale, Sean McGuire, Bill Ackman, Ronald Lauder, what are these people going to think? What are they going to do? What are they going to do to our country? If Trump tells Israel no, are our pagers going to explode? Are our radios and pagers and iPhones going to explode? Is Starlink going to stop working? Is a dirty bomb going to go off in New York City? Is Trump going to get assassinated in his motorcade like JFK? What is going to happen if an American president tells Israel no? Because what it seems like is we're going to have to fight a war in America if that happens. What happened to the Ayatollah? He was at his residence when a Tomahawk missile came out of the sky and killed him. Is something like that going to happen? Does the U.S. president have to go underground like Iran's missiles? Does the U.S. president have to hunker down under the White House, under 100 feet of clay, to tell Israel no? Does he have to end all of his public appearances and get rid of all of his devices and background check all his Secret Service and go to the whatever that fortress is in Colorado and the Rocky Mountains? Is he going to have to do that in preparation to tell Israel, here's how it's going to work, you don't get to destroy Iran? Because that's what it seems like. And I think everybody knows that. Because you could say, what American president would choose going to war with Iran over telling Israel no? But then you think about what is involved in telling Israel no, and who's going to be upset and what they're going to do. If they control our media, if they control our security apparatus, if they control our banking system, if they are the intermediaries, the middlemen with everything, global trade, they have a position in the court of every government in the world. What are they going to do to us? Are you starting to understand the problem? What plan B do they have in store for Americans? They had a plan B for Hezbollah. They put plastic explosives in all their pagers. Hezbollah was running around for 10 fucking years with radios and pagers, talking to each other, communicating on their hip every day. And there were plastic explosives planted by Israel the entire time. How the fuck do you think they did that? They've got shell corporations everywhere. Where does Hezbollah even get their pagers? Some electronics wholesaler, some manufacturer. Israel's got shell companies inside of shell companies, factories, fake LLCs. It's all obfuscated. Shipping companies, they probably control the factory where it's made. They control the facility where it's distributed. They control the ships upon which they were delivered. How convoluted. That's the Mossad, and that is the Mossad's Jewish allies in all the in Eastern Europe, in Asia. Who even knows the extent of this? And this is what they had in store for Hezbollah. You don't think they got a plan B for America? You don't think they've thought about that? They prepared. That was 10 years in the making. 10 years. Hezbollah's walking around with plastic explosives in their pagers. They had people in Iran following around the Ayatollah for 10 years. You don't think they got somebody on Trump? He's on TV. His name's Howard Lutnick. They had somebody following the Ayatollah, giving his whereabouts to Israeli intelligence the whole time, for years. So did the CIA. You don't think Israel has somebody on the president at all times? You don't think they got a plan B for our financial markets, for our credit system, for the money supply, for the media? You don't think they've got stuff in New York? You don't think they have a warehouse in New York? In LA, in Miami, they do. You can almost be sure of it. And that's why the American president doesn't want to take them on, because he knows he'd rather the explosives go off over there than go off over here. This is when I say Iran is fighting for all of us, because you think about, okay, you want to fight Israel. What do you need to do? Well, Israel has the U.S. at its beck and call for these reasons. They've got nuclear bombs. They've got an air force furnished by the United States. They've got the Mossad. Jews are everywhere, and the Mossad talks to all of them in Tehran, in Brussels, in Paris, in Washington, in Moscow, in Petersburg, everywhere. How the fuck are you going to fight back against that? I'll tell you how. You need a country of 100 million people. You need a revolutionary guard of religious zealots ready to die for their cause. You need them answerable to a supreme leader who's a cleric ready to die. You need 5,000 missiles buried underground. As a matter of fact, you need the facilities that make the missiles buried inside of mountains. You need enough uranium for 10 nuclear bombs. And then the United States will consider not trying to smoke you out with everything in our arsenal. You might survive. Are we prepared for that? That is what it cost Iran to tell Israel no. That is what it cost Iran. That is the price of their sovereignty. That's what sovereignty is. It's the ability to tell another country no. What is the price that Iran has to pay to tell Israel and Washington no? They had to turn their country into a fortress. They had to build a 1 million man army motivated by religion, and then they had to turn their entire country into a military base with drone and missile launch platforms everywhere and underground, and they had to sacrifice everything to build these capabilities. And they had to have 200,000 Revolutionary Guard with a bench, 7 people deep, because they knew all of them were going to get assassinated. That's what they're doing to protect themselves. Is the United States ready for that? Are you ready for that? You think Donald Trump is ready for that when he's at Mar-a-Lago golfing? You think that when Air Force One lands at Palm Beach, which is the headquarters of Jewry as well, and he goes to his club and he's playing golf, you think he is as prepared as the Ayatollah, as Hezbollah? He's not. Is our National Guard or our armed forces? No. Is the American public? No. What do you think happens when our country collapses the way that Iran's has? Do you think that we could get hit with 15,000 missiles and survive? It's going to be a race war. You turn the lights out for 3 hours, and it's going to be Planet of the Apes in every American city. Lots of luck, everybody. Lots of luck. This is what we're up against. And this is what I've learned in my own life. This is what I have learned in my own life. You start talking about politics, you're just some guy living your life. Then you start talking about the Jews. And the Jews realize, wait a second, if this guy starts winning and gets popular, this is going to be a political problem for us, which is really a security problem for us. So they wage war on you as a human being. And they say every weakness, every loved one, everything. It's like if they try to kill you, are you prepared for that? Are you thinking about, you know, do I leave my house at the same time? Do I take the same route to work? Is my house prepped for if I get bombed or shot at or drone striked with an FPV drone? You have to think about, what about my loved ones? What happens if someone black bags them and tells them to give them everything they have on me, or else they kill that person's family? Or, you know, that person's... It's like, this is how you have to think as an individual. Now think about how a country has to think. We have to prepare ourselves for war. We're not ready. You have to prepare yourselves for war because we're in a war. It's what it is. And that's what it takes. If you're not prepared for war, you can't tell Israel no. And if you can't tell Israel no, then you have no sovereignty. And if you're not willing to fight for your sovereignty, then you're a slave. If you're not willing to go to war and fight, then you better just put the shackles on and go to work, goy, because that's what the fuck you are. That's what we all are. So you can choose. We can be soldiers or we can be slaves. We can start to think about these things seriously and get serious and steel ourselves and get serious about being a free and independent and powerful people. Or we can say, I'd rather live my life. I'll let Israel control the global empire. I want to go to school board meetings. That's what they want us to think. Matt Walsh tells us, hey, you know, that's over there. Who gives a shit about, you know, the maintenance of the world empire. What matters is your neighborhood and whether your kids have to play volleyball with the tranny. Okay. Yeah, the niggers should worry about what's happening in the cotton fields, right? Go sing your slave song, niggers. And, you know, let the big house worry about everything else. I mean, that's literally what it is. You go and worry about your school board meetings. You go and worry about the school board. You worry about what your little goyim kids are learning in school as they get indoctrinated to become another goy slave. And you just shut the fuck up. And you let the Jews maintain the global empire. They will fight and they will have valor and they will determine the course of history and events. And you just shut the fuck up and stop thinking about it. You worry about, I don't know, Disney Plus. You worry about, you know, whether Harry Potter is black or not. You worry about your num-nums. You worry about your goy nip, your goy feed that you're eating. That's what they want us to do. They want us posting pictures of our wooden cutting boards. Yeah, yeah, just worry about your num-nums. Worry about your little num-nums. Worry about what's on your TV. Worry about this dating discourse and everything like that. Worry about your bitch-ass little kids or about your fucking pussy-ass bitch-ass kids. My kid, oh, my kid got beaten up by a tranny in volleyball. Okay. And in Israel, they're preparing their children to, they're like telling their kids how to run BlackRock. In Brooklyn, they're teaching their kids, okay, here's how you run BlackRock. This is how you run BlackRock, and this is how you run the global economy, and this is how we're gonna run Palantir, and this is how we're gonna run the Middle East, and then the World Island. What class do we want to be in, and what class do we want our children to be in? I don't want them to be mud farmers. I want them to be the aristocrats. I want them to be the diplomats, the leaders, because it's our country. Anyway, that's a bit of a digression, but it's true. So that's where we're headed. I don't know that this two-week ceasefire is going to last. I mean, I'm glad that we averted the worst here. And all the plan trusters are going to say, oh, see, we did it, just like they said last year. Last year, they said, see, it was only 12 days. This year, oh, see, it was only 39 days. Until the next time we go to war with Iran, I'll tell you what's not going to happen. Unless we confront Israel, we are not going to let Iran do their thing. They're never going to capitulate to us, and we're never going to let them alone. So one of those two things will have to happen, and something's got to give.